feast, break our fast, and to feast. So two of my big sisters are here. Very special to have them. Mother Jimona was down a couple of days ago, so we got a preview. And now Mother Dina Tarni is here. And I was explaining how on the Govinda tape that is played all over the world, so you have a chance to meet that transcendental voice that's behind it. And so our devotees have been concerned about the Gurukula situation. We're very new here in this area. We've actually been in this house, I guess, for almost 2 years now? Almost 2 years. And we're looking for land and how to be able to farm, and mainly to establish so that all of our people are all working, so they can live, you know, closer together. Now we're living all over town, some of them living in a few houses together. But we want to have arrangements so that we can be able to create more, you know, of a nucleus for our own protection, and also to share whatever little that we have, or whatever little that we can acquire in Prabhupada's service. And of course we want to venture into more iteration of Gurukula situation. When I first came to join in a temple, visiting a temple in New York, as I mentioned, sometime we were back in New York, Radha Govinda was the first deities that I gazed upon in his lifetime. But the first temple that I lived in was Dallas. And that was in 1972. Gurukula was going, and there were so many little small people running around. And Dina Tarni, if I remember, she was always busy. And anxiety trying to arrange things. It was so hard with so many kids, so many problems. And we were so new in so many ways, trying to see how to train the children, discipline them, but not to to be excessive, or not to deny some authority, but at the same time loving authority. There's many complexities. I've seen some of those children when we were in Panihata last time. Now they're like 28, 30 years old. Many of them have their own children. And look back at how small they were then and where they are now. You realize how time is going so fast, and it's not really waiting on anyone. How important it is to see that whatever time we have, we're able to offer it back to Krishna and to the mercy of the Parampara. The time really isn't our time, we just are in it. Now we have to face it back at the lotus feet of the Lord and of the spiritual master. To the degree we place it back, we use our mind, body, and intelligence. The more that we're able to bypass the mental, the subtle as well as the gross platform, and understand more about the actual soul. So the devotees are full of anxieties and wanting to hear from the two of you. Even yesterday we had a little discussion about some managerial things. And also we were discussing some things even about the issues of the position of women in the society and Varnashram Dharma. It's good that you both are here. Help with some clarification on things also, and your realization. So because we're greedy, we're hoping maybe you both could come and speak together, and that if you could start off by, after chanting Jai Radha Madhava, you could tell us something about some of your most memorable experiences, you know, with Srila Prabhupada, and then we can dive in and try to share some of those experiences with you. It's very unique in one sense, because so many of the new devotees now, or most of the devotees that are in the movement around the world, never saw Srila Prabhupada. Or to say of having a chance to do services for him, or what to say, they have a chance to travel with him. And so, some of you have had those experiences where you've done so many services and got distinct direct instructions, and have watched and take notice of Prabhupada as he interacts and does his various services. Now we have the diaries and the biographies and the conversation books. And of course we have so many other books. But that is one flavor. But another flavor is being in the presence of the pure devotee and to receive his smile, receive his chastisement, receive his glance, receive his encouragement, and to get those transcendental cues. And sometimes we feel that aspect is really kind of missing the movement that as we're moving more and more into the scientific technological age, now the information age actually, there's so much tendency, we're so absorbed in the data, we're so much absorbed in the form of the manpower and the money and the buildings and so many creditors and whatnot, paying this mortgage, that mortgage, that we sometimes forget the most basic thing, the most important commodity, and that is the devotees themselves. Vaishnavas themselves are the greatest wealth that we have, and that is our greatest treasure, to somehow be able to experience more of the love that is natural in associations if we allow it to come out. When that love is there, and so many other problems just naturally are eradicated, because the love is so powerful, so forceful, and it has such ability to allow Krishna to and more divine intervention to take place. As we see how difficult it is for people to cope, like most of our devotees are working 8-9 hours a day, and we're requesting very much that they work for Krishna even more, and that even that the jobs they make their job a place where they can be able to glorify the Lord through using the service of that their job entails, or being able to preach on their job, so that it's not like they have a material self and a spiritual self, and they become schizoid with self to access at one time. And so, as they have come to the movement a little different than we did, most of us came, we came quite young, 19, 20, 21, 25. But they're also young, 45 years young, 50 years young, 55 years young. Some a little younger, some a little older. So, it's wonderful as they're fresh. Most of 1 year, 2 years. Next month, well, actually this month now, only in a few weeks, we're going to have initiation, and maybe about 24 devotees between here in this Washington area, and then maybe 6-7 other devotees outside other areas will be taking initiation. And we have about, I guess, about 35 or so initiated devotees now within this this area. Some of us are here now. Some are a few of the bhaktas, also bhakti teams. So, the greediness is still there, whether we are 1 year or 3 years, or old timers like ourselves. We always want to be able to matita magita pana, poyatascha paraspara, kadayantascha maracha, tushanicha ramanicha. We want to enliven each other by hearing the message about the goal and the means for executing that particular goal. So, people can grace us by coming up, and then we can be able to hear from you.
I wanted to tell you first, Maharaj, a little strange thing that happened to us yesterday. We didn't have the address of this place, and we were thinking we were going to call it the Toli Temple to get it. But in the meantime, we had a video that we wanted to see, and we went down in front of the TV to put the video in, and there it worked.
On the video or the television?
On the,
no, on the television.
Oh, okay.
And
your
telephone number was...
You know, I mean, you're definitely supposed to be here. Yeah, we have nice contact with the media and politicians and things.
That's great.
And so we're on TV sometimes, you know, 2 or 3 times a week.
Oh, that's great.
Maryland cable, DC cable. And also the Virginia cable.
It was just the channel that was on.
Vaishnava Kurti
Jai.
Small.
Oh, Srila Prabhupada was a very regal, refined a Bengali gentleman. And as he walked amongst us, he stood out just like a ray of sunshine in a dark place. He illuminated that place by his presence. And just as Srila Krishnapad was speaking about the fact that we have so many wonderful books now to relish Srila Prabhupada with, actually it's Srila Prabhupada the person that should, I think, be stressed very much in the coming years, not only for Srila Prabhupada's centennial celebration, but for practically launching this movement into the next century. This person of Srila Prabhupada was so very attractive. And I've been speaking quite a bit about Srila Prabhupada in the last 6 months as I've been traveling around the world to some of our temples that I had never been to, temples in Poland and East Bloc countries, and then many of the temples that Srila Prabhupada founded in India. And sometimes I've gone through one entire day with Srila Prabhupada to let you get a feeling of what it was like to be with him for a day. And perhaps I could do that just very briefly. You could get an insight into his character. I could take a period of 1969. This was in John Lennon's estate. He was one of the Beatles in the 60s. And he lived at a place called Tittenhurst Park, Ascot, Berkshire. And he had just connected up with Yoko Ono. And at this time, we had no place to live, our small party of devotees that had come to start the London Temple. So through George Harrison, it was arranged that we would stay, our party of devotees would stay at this estate of John Lennon's in preparation for Srila Prabhupada's first arrival in the United Kingdom in 1969. So we moved in, and I always liken that to the first Kartik season that I ever spent with Srila Prabhupada. Kartik is a very auspicious time in the fall season that lasts, well actually the full Kartik season in the 4 months. But it's an auspicious time where a devotee relishes very deeply the practices of sadhana bhakti. Those are things like chanting and hearing and worshipping and remembering, the ninefold processes of devotional service. And as you engage in these activities consciously during this period, the increased benefit of it is up to 100-fold more potent than the rest of the time of the year. So it's a very auspicious time to take a deep bath in the process of Krishna consciousness, the process of devotional service. And to have access of great saintly persons during this time is very auspicious indeed. It's a very powerful time. So as this society was very new, it had just been founded in 1966, 69 was the first time that I had personally to spend with Srila Prabhupada more than 2 months period of this Kartik season. So Srila Prabhupada flew in from Hamburg and arrived at John Lennon's in the month of September. And the situation was that the devotees, some of the male devotees in our party were working at John Lennon's house doing construction work in the daytime. And then some of our men were also in London trying to put the finishing touches on our temple. And there weren't a lot of women in our party, but my younger sister Janki, the first female devotee, and Malati Devi, who was Shamsakrishwar, we were part of the first six devotees that came to England. We were all engaged in Srila Prabhupada's personal service for this Kartik season. So although Srila Prabhupada had a servant, a formal servant, his name was Purushottam Das, and Purushottam mostly did the translation work on the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, which is the synopsis of CC, the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And Srila Prabhupada, I don't know if you know, but he had had a very severe series of heart attacks when he was on the Jalabhita boat, a sea ship coming from Calcutta. And then in 1967 in New York, he had another almost life-threatening heart attack. So at this time, he wasn't sure how long he was going to be spending on the planet with us. So he did both the Krishna book, which was the synopsis of the 10th canto, a condensed version of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, as well as the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, immediately, so that we as his disciples would have access to this great body of knowledge. So Purushottam was working on the manuscripts for the teachings of Lord Chaitanya in the day, and I was engaged more or less from about 3 o'clock in the morning to 11 o'clock at night in Srila Prabhupada's personal service. So that began, Srila Prabhupada only slept about 2 hours a night. 2 hours or sometimes 3. Now that isn't that to say that we should artificially imitate that. It just means that he was of such a spiritual caliber and he had enough spiritual energy. But that's all the sleep that he required. So that meant that he could work nearly 22 hours a day for Krishna consciousness. And what he did in those 22 hours is truly miraculous. It's almost like putting an elephant through the eye of a needle. Srila Prabhupada had such a tremendous capacity for giving of himself. And on so many levels, in so many different ways, that volumes of books couldn't really describe the wonder of his character. But suffice it to say that anybody who wanted Srila Prabhupada's personal association got it in those days. There was an open door policy so that he never had private permission to himself. Save and except for the short period of time that he rested. Now, generally speaking, he took rest around 11 p.m. and was up by 1 a.m. So it was between 1 a.m. and the Mangal Arati time of our temples, which ranged between 4 and 4:30 in most of our temples, that Srila Prabhupada took the opportunity to not only chant his japa, but to translate all of the books that he translated. In the Guinness Book of World Records, Srila Prabhupada is the most prolific writer of his age. In 11 years, he put out more tomes of volumes than any other contemporary writer of our times. And we know the subject matter of these books are not of a mundane nature. They are, If you listen or if you watch a video of Srila Prabhupada, he is praying and worshiping the Supreme Personality of Godhead with every word of his translation of the sacred texts of Srimad Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavad Gita, and Chaitanya Charitamrita. And if you watch, if you have access, sometimes you'll note that Srila Prabhupada will pause for a very long time in his translation and meditate very deeply. And then, just coming as if from the spiritual world, such relevant and pertinent and very deep subject matter comes out in such a simple language for us to understand. So this morning time was the time that Srila Prabhupada translated his books and chanted his japa. And in many different places and in many different circumstances, I had an opportunity to witness Srila Prabhupada doing this as his servant. Sometimes I would hide the door and watch. Sometimes it was a very large hall. I would take the liberty to go at the other end of the room and sit and chant myself, get up very early and join him. Anyone who was his servant that I had the access to speak to, naturally all of the servants of Srila Prabhupada, anybody who had personal access to him in this time, you want to speak with them and talk to them about how they observed Srila Prabhupada do these activities throughout the day. And also from many other servants, I heard wonderful stories of Jim Paul that engaged in these activities. But at John Lennon's, he did this, at that time I rose about 2 a.m. And then at 3 a.m. at John Lennon's, which was a little bit unusual, Srila Prabhupada had a Mangal Arati in his quarters, in his quarters. And at this time, this was really the beginning of the introduction of the worship of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna within our society. Just like these magnificent views of Radha and Krishna that you're worshiping here in this temple. The first time that I had access to be personally trained by Srila Prabhupada in the art deity worship was at John Lennon's at this time. And they were simply called Srila Prabhupada's deities. They were little six-inch Radha Krishna deities that were almost so small that it took one's eyes a little time to become accustomed to seeing their form. And in the beginning, sometimes people that walk into a temple, they'll come into the temple where the deities are in the center, and it'll take them some time to even realize that there are Radha Krishna deities there. They'll see the flowers, and they'll smell the incense, and they'll see so many things that are around Krishna. But the actual form of Krishna, it takes a little time to get your eyes adjusted to seeing, to have the darshan, or standing in front of and seeing the Lord. So these little deities that brought in Krishna for the first time, and at this time, for training purposes, he had a special Mangal Arati in his room. And at that time, the servant Purushan Ram and myself and Jiva Prabhupada were the only three persons at that Arati. And we would all rotate on different days' service. So some days, Purushottam would perform the arti, and I would sing with Srila Prabhupada responsibly. And some days, I would do the arti, and Purushottam would respond with Prabhupada. And sometimes, Prabhupada would do the arti, and Purushottam and I would respond. And in this way, we had an opportunity to understand the first and most important element of deity worship, and that is Harinam Sankirtan. This is the instruction of Jiva Goswami, that just like all the regulative principles, the most important principle is chanting these 16 rounds. For us, for the most important principle for worshiping the deity is chanting the following deity. So we had, this was the first and beginning simple introduction during this period. And then at 4:30, we all went over to, at John Lennon's side, the property is an immense, beautiful estate called the Cadbury's Chocolate Estate, from the Cadbury Chocolate Family. And one of the buildings on that land was a harpsichord recital hall, a very beautiful building, huge building. And the acoustics, it was nearly 200-300 years old, and the acoustics in this building were so superlative that if you dropped a straight pin in one corner of the room, you'd hear the music from the dropping. So we didn't need microphones in this room. And our small party of under 20 devotees, maybe 20 devotees, 17, between 15 and 17 of us, sounded like a huge choir with 200-300 voices. And we were just having rock out kirtans. Absolutely beautiful kirtans. Just filled this place with transmural sound. It was really ecstatic. And the deities in that place were very small, little 6-7 inch high carved jagannaths and the Balaram. Shyam Sundar Das, one of the members in our party, he's one of the first devotees to carve Jagannath Subhadra deities, and he had just carved a large set for our London temple, but they weren't out at Jagannath. Then after the morning program, of course, there was the kirtan. Prabhupada's program was always the kirtan, and then there was a class, and then a second kirtan, and then some little prasad distribution. And at that time, the classes were on the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And they were of such a nature that Prabhupada made the classes so exciting that it was as if going to a film, or watching a serial on a soap box opera, or watching a Saturday afternoon to be continued show. They were so exciting that you couldn't wait to get to Bhagavatam class and find out the next installment of what was going to happen in the fifth canto. So it wasn't a, you know, kind of one of these, you sit in class and as the speakers, they kind of you're to the side, somebody has to prod you, and then somebody has to, you have to stand up to keep your eyes propped open. It wasn't like that. It was just riveting to listen to Srila Prabhupada. Because he had a way of making our philosophy come alive and make it very easy for you to relate to the philosophy. Very deep subject matter. And then after that second kirtan, which was usually a Gopinda Jai kirtan, and in those days, sometimes the men and the women would chant responsibly back and forth.
Right.
Sometimes we would do like you did, you get in line to hold each other like this and dance around. Very lively kirtan, very good kirtan. And we had a trumpet player there, and a sax player there, and I think John Lennon had a couple keyboards in there. And they were really really good kirtans. And we were also very used to chanting with each other because we had our own little group that did the Govindam record and such. So musically it was really tight. And Srila Prabhupada would just sit, usually sit with his head rocking back and forth and his eyes closed. And sometimes, every once in a while, he would get up from his vyasasan and dance this, what we call the Prabhupada step. And it was, when Srila Prabhupada did this, it was truly like a Gandharva, an angel. As we perceive what is an angel, he would sway back and forth, and his arms were very long, and his hands in the air, and his robes would usually just swoosh back and forth on the ground, and we'd go into ecstasy. So sometimes that would happen to me. And then after that, Srila Prabhupada would take his morning walk. Once Srila Prabhupada said that three things kept him in good health. That is Ayurveda, massage, and walking. So it took me about 25 years myself to catch on to the importance of this. You know, for about 25 years I never even know what a massage was. Thought that was sense gratification. And walking, I go on walks, but never serious. Probably on a serious morning walk. This was a brisk morning walk. And during that time, we would chant the holy name, chant japa, or if there were people there that were interesting conversations, sometimes strike up good conversations, and some of those good conversations are recorded, much to our great, and at this time, John Lennon's the walks were wonderful because there's a dispute as actually how many acres there were there, but it was a very large property. And there were over, the gardens were nearly three, four generations old, and they've been very carefully planted so that there were representations of almost 200 or 300 trees that were labeled on the property. And we could walk through so many areas of these gorgeous formal gardens and be in different moods throughout the garden. And that walk would take nearly 1 hour, very brisk morning walk with Srila Prabhupada. And so sometimes of the three of us, either Purushottam or myself would go in the morning walk with Srila Prabhupada, and then one person would stay back and take care of the deities. And as I said, most of the other devotees at this time, this was a very unusual time, because ordinarily, in most of our centers, there were huge crowds of people to go on a morning walk with Prabhupada, and there were actually queues of people in waiting lists to go for morning walks with Prabhupada. But at this time, because everybody was engaged and our party was very small, sometimes there were just one or two of us at the most on a morning walk with Srila Prabhupada. And I could actually go in detail in terms of some of the morning walks with him. I used to keep notebooks on practically everything that Prabhupada said, but when I left India in 1974, all of my notebooks, save for two, were stolen, actually out of my trunks. So those diaries are gone. But I do recall verbatim some of those conversations with him, and they were so very exciting. There was one morning that I remember Srila Prabhupada, Now, this is October. Now, we're into October from September, October, so. And, oh, Yoko Ono, who was the lady of the house, John's wife, she had decided to take these gorgeous formal gardens and let the grass grow everywhere. She wanted it natural. So at this point, the grass was nearly, oh, I should say, between 8 and 12 inches high.
Yeah.
And as you know, in October, when the seasons are changing, generally speaking, in the morning, all the grass is very wet. And especially if there's been a fog in the morning, which there oftentimes was there, that didn't burn off until about 10 in the morning. So Srila Prabhupada wore, during this time, a black full-length long coat and a black Cossack hat, like a Russian Cossack hat with ear flaps, and black welly boots that came up to mid-calf, and black and white woolen mittens. And I had a black cape, a long black cape that I wore. I remember there were just two black figures walking with all this green on this grass. So at one point in the walk, I turned around because there was only two of us on the walk this morning, and all of a sudden in the bushes was my husband taking photographs. And Srila Prabhupada, when he saw that, he said, oh, Gurudas is there. And he said, all these photos, he said, they should not be distributed. Because they see that a sannyasi is walking alone with a female disciple, somebody may criticize. Mm. He said, because we must follow etiquette. He said, I do not mind. But if somebody sees this, maybe they will criticize. So I just want you to know that although Srila Prabhupada allowed this at this time because it was very small, generally it's not the etiquette for a sannyasi to be alone with his disciples. Nonetheless, as I turned around, I looked in the grass and I saw only one set of footprints in this wet grass. And they were mine. There was no footprints where I saw the walk. So I was just completely stunned. And we were at the top of a hill, and there was this hill, and I said, at that time we called Srila Prabhupada Swamiji. I said, Swamiji, I've just been looking in the grass behind us, and I only see one set of footprints. Why is that? And he paused quite some time, and he said, that is for you to find out. And he walked on down the hill. I was truly amazed with that. Then when we got to the bottom of the hill, I remember he said, we were walking through an arbor at this autumn time. All the trees were golden and red, just ablaze with flowers. And we were walking underneath an arbor of trees. And I said, Swamiji, what was that song you sang last night in Kirtan? Because the night before we had been to a program at Conway Hall, the famous Conway Hall lectures in London. And I had a meeting at Kirtan, and Srila Prabhupada, right in the middle of the Kirtan, which was really going like anything, he began singing, Narad Muni Bajai Vina Radhika Amananamre. And all of us in the kirtan, we were playing our kartals, just like if we were in the kirtan, and all of a sudden, Krishnapad just started singing on his own. So I looked up at Srila Prabhupada, and he went chant. So I kept singing Hare Krishna, and then the audience would respond, and then instead of me leading the next one, Prabhupada would sing a verse from this song. And then the audience would chant Hare Krishna, and then I would lead a Hare Krishna, then they would respond, then he would do another verse. And it was the first time that I had ever been in a kirtan like this, where Srila Prabhupada was leading a prayer, and I was leading a prayer, and the audience was responding, and actually this kirtan got to be so ecstatic that everybody in the entire room was off their feet. And we had one little girl in our party that was about the size of this little girl in red. And she also, there were photographs taken of this night with this kirtan, and everybody is off the ground at the same time, including this little girl with her diaper showing out underneath her little dress. And Prabhupada's eyes are closed, and I'm looking up at Prabhupada just in awe. And so I said, this is on the morning walk, I said, Swamiji, what was that song you sang last night? And he said, that was a prayer where Narayana and Lord Brahma are engaged in chanting Hare Krishna. And she said, did you see Lord Brahma and Narayana Muni sing to our kirtan last night? And I said, no, Swamiji, I didn't see that. And he said, they were there.
Prabhupada!
And so I was just astounded at that. And then at another part of our morning walk, he said, so I have been called many names. He said, my very young childhood, he said, my name was Nandlal, because I was born the day after Lord Krishna was born, on the day of Nandotsava. The day after Janmashtami is called Nandotsava. And the day after Janmashtami was Srila Prabhupada's appearance day, which we know we only celebrated one day after. So he said, I was called Nandlal as a child. And then he said, I was also called by my maternal auntie, a little male lion cub. He said, because I was a little feisty, a little ferocious, like a little lion male cub. But he said that. So this is an example of just one morning walk with Srila Prabhupada, which was very briskly taken on these beautiful grounds at Jananda's estate. And after Srila Prabhupada came back from his morning walk, he would come in the front door of his little apartment, take off his coat and his hat and his welly boots and his gloves, and then walk up the stairs to his small room, which was for translating, and his office. That's where he spent almost his whole day, in this room, working. And that's where the little Radha and Krishna deities were. And then Srila Prabhupada would chant for nearly 1 hour on the harmonium. With the harmonium, or with the tambura, or with the mridanga. And every morning we would record those. And at one point, he asked me what my favorite prayer was, and I said, Sikasta prayer. And I asked him what his favorite prayer was, and he said, Hari Hari Vipalai, prayer of Narayana Sakya. And that morning he chanted Hari Vipalai. And that was the first time that I was physically present with him when he chanted this prayer. And when he chanted this prayer, Srila Prabhupada's body would actually go through transformations. Such a deep, profound prayer this is. And he sang it in a very humming minor melody. And he would repeat this first line, Hari, Hari Vipale, Janama, Janama Gohinu, Hari. Sometimes 15, sometimes 20 times, over and over. And this, the purport of this is that, although I have come to this human form of life, my Lord, I have wasted my time uselessly. Over and over he would sing this. That's the first time he sang it, and gentlemen, and then at four other times, I heard Srila Prabhupada chant this, and that was also so very profound when he chanted this. He also chanted all 18 chapters of the Bhagavad Gita, Ramayana, this time in Sanskrit. And he said that any place where the Bhagavad Gita is recited in Sanskrit, that place becomes a tirtha. That place becomes a holy place of a sound vibration. He said, if you just play these tapes He said, immediately that place will become a gym. Unfortunately, only chapters 1 through 7 of the Bhagavad Gita in Sanskrit from this time were saved. Unfortunately, the early going on the tower never got those full chapter. Then after nearly an hour chanting, and there are so many different memories I have of that chanting here, from about 10, then Prabhupada would take a very light breakfast. And Prabhupada's breakfast consisted generally of fresh fruits. He ate fresh fruits. On some occasions, if it was very cold, or if he had a little appetite, he would ask for something light for breakfast. Sometimes some potatoes, like Americans like hash browns, Prabhupada like dried potatoes. The equivalent of dried potato, hash brown, is what you call dried potatoes. And that could be one of many forms, but something a little fried. And sometimes a little poori instead of toast, you would take poori, you know, poori. But almost always it was fresh fruit. And something very light. Sometimes he would take a glass of hot milk, nice hot milk. Then from 10 to 12, Srila Prabhupada would engage in letter writing. Correspondence. As you know, there are how many volumes of letters? 5? 6 volumes of problem letters. Some of those letters have been lost also, but that's mostly the bulk of all the letters. And Srila Prabhupada did a great deal of preaching through these letters. Because in the physical absence of spiritual master, this is one of the ways that we have the closest access to him and his instructions is through letters. Just like when Srila Krishnapada isn't here, you deal with correspondence in some way, email, fax machines, and more modern ways. But at that time, letter was the primary way that Srila Prabhupada corresponded with his disciples and with the many people that asked him questions. And anyone who also wrote Srila Prabhupada immediately would have that letter answered. He was very responsible about immediate response in letter writing. And this is also a wonderful art to learn. It's a lost art. But if you do read these letters, you'll see how expert Srila Prabhupada was in that. There's everything from just plain patting on the back to real serious business, banking business, etc., and what's to be done. There's practical examples that are applicable for all of us. Not all letters can be taken by everyone in the same context. That's one thing about the letters. Can't necessarily rubber stamp that this is the way it's always. So these were also individual instructions that Srila Prabhupada gave. Then Srila Prabhupada would take his lunch for Shahad roundabout, never after 1, if possible. Because according to Ayurvedic, his Ayurvedic medicine was taken about 6:30 in the morning. Remember I said the 3 ways? What were the 3 ways that he kept alive? Right. Massage, walking, and Ayurveda. So the Ayurveda medicine was taken in the morning on an empty stomach before any food was taken. Then he took his lunch, prasad, before 1, because that's when the fire of digestion is said to be at its zenith, where you have the most power to digest. And Srila Prabhupada, I had the opportunity to cook for him from 1966 to 1975. And over that period of time, never did he give the same instruction, the same way, twice.
For 9 years?
Off and on, yes. Wow. And he never gave, only if you didn't hear it, then you would have to repeat. But generally speaking, Srila Prabhupada revealed more and more about the art of service through cooking as a discipline, a yogic discipline, as an art, as a means of expressing love, as so many things, as a means of sustaining both mind, body, and soul, so many things for Srila Prabhupada. But in that period of time, he was always revealing yet another dimension or another depth of what it meant to cook in Krishna consciousness. So at this time, he was giving very simple instructions in cooking, and his diet was fairly fairly simple, straightforward. He sometimes would have kitchery as his main meal with a little yogurt and potatoes. And then sometimes rice dolls or patties with little vegetables. Then after Srila Prabhupada's lunch, oh, and Prabhupada took nearly 45 minutes to eat his meal. And he deeply meditated while he ate his prasadam. Actually, to just watch him eat prasadam was beautiful. There were some very brazen people that took Super 8 films and pictures of him, and they are in some of the archives of Prabhupada eating a plate of prasadam, with devotees knowing about in the background. Actually, these were taken in New York in the 60s and 66. But Swami Sadhguru Maharaj, he also said to simply watch Srila Prabhupada eat his lunch was one of the most transcendental things he ever witnessed. Just to watch him eat was amazing. Because he was meditating deeply, respecting this as Krishna's mercy. It really was Krishna's energy. So he's very, very slow and really relishing prasadam. That was when he was on his own. If he was with guests or they were being hosted, he would do as according to the guests, the host's temple. Then after that, Srila Prabhupada would chant generally one or two rounds. And sometimes he would take a short nap. Sometimes he would go immediately into another service. And that was usually behind closed doors. He was left alone until about 3:30 or 4 in the afternoon. At 3:30 or 4 in the afternoon, he would take us a little refreshment, usually a glass of juice, another small glass of juice. And as a little savory snack, he was very fond of something called chidwa, which would be like the equivalent of fried nuts and raisins, but it's a little more complex sometimes than any little savory snack. And then at that time, he would start getting reports from all of his devotees. They would start filtering back from the London Project. And practically speaking, he would ask for a report from everyone on how their service had gone that day, to see that actually something was done that day in Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada was very reciprocal with his devotees. And in this way, as you reveal and you hear, then you learn and you reflect upon your spiritual life. So in learning how to report to Srila Prabhupada and what our activities were that day, we had to try to be Krishna conscious. So associating with the spiritual master or with the spiritual leader means that you're reflecting on your spiritual life, because that dialogue should be of a spiritual nature on a very spiritual and transcendental platform. So simply to report to Prabhupada was very wonderful. To hear others report to Srila Prabhupada was very wonderful. You went from hearing how others express themselves and the instruction Prabhupada would give to others, as well as those that he gave to you individually. And that would go on till nearly 10 at night. Sometimes in the late evening, between 9 and 11, he would have some special guests that came out there to the estate, and he would host them as a gentleman would host, and then take the rest of them. So this just gives you a little slice of one day spent with Srila Prabhupada and his association. And just because of time, I could probably start there before he speaks a little something. If you have any questions on this, I'd be glad to ask, answer.
Why don't we have Dina speak, and then we ask both your questions.
Okay.
Otherwise, they take the whole day.
Extensive association with Srila Prabhupada that Jamuna was fortunate enough to have. But I so much relished every occasion that I was able to be in his presence, because Srila Prabhupada was so artistic in his presence, in his movement. It was almost as though everything that he did was choreographed from the spiritual world. It was very difficult to explain, but each movement, whether he was picking his teeth or scratching an arm or opening a book or signing his name with his pen, was beautifully shaped and sculpted, very artistic, very dramatic, and graceful, extremely graceful. He walked very gracefully, spoke very gracefully, his movements and articulations were extremely graceful, as was his speech. And Srila Prabhupada, assuming the morning walks, I wasn't able to go on many morning walks with Srila Prabhupada because I was always the pujari, or someone who had to stay behind to do some service. But I had the opportunity to take some walks with Srila Prabhupada in South India once when we went to Hyderabad and Tirupati. And I was thinking how Srila Prabhupada so carefully took care of each of us and saw that all of us were, our spiritual and material needs were taken care of. He was extremely personable, and despite his rigorous schedule and all of the demands that so many disciples placed upon him, he was always concerned and carefully looked after our needs. I remember one time in this Tirupati, we had taken some walks. My guide, Sister Vishaka, who was a photographer, took many of the wonderful photos that we have of Tirupati. We were sitting in the little house that they had arranged for us, and all of a sudden we were on this very large mountain, and this area of South India is exquisitely beautiful. This temple in Tirupati is called the Temple of Sri Venkateshvara, or Balaji. Lord Chaitanya visited this temple when he was here, and it's considered one of the two or three most prominent temples in India. Many, many millions of people take pilgrimage to this temple every year. Some of them walk up the mountain to reach the top, and it's very well maintained. And the deity is enclosed within a mountain, the top of a mountain that they literally carved out and covered the top with a dome of gold. And when one takes darshan of this deity, one has to go through this cave. I remember, feel very offensive to say it now, but one of my dreams had always been to touch the lotus feet of my spiritual master. And I remember bowing down in this very small area of the temple and trying to touch his feet, and he wouldn't know. I never got there. I think someone stepped on my heel. But at any rate, this day we were sitting on this mountainside, and there were these terraced gardens going down. And as we looked out, we saw two little tops of heads walking along, because from where we were, that was our angle of vision. And we recognized the heads as Srila Prabhupada and Sasrupa Maharaj, who was walking there. So we immediately ran out there and thought, oh, this is some nectar, we get to walk with them. And we started walking along these beautiful paths and these terraced gardens. And Srila Prabhupada was speaking about avidya, ignorance. I can't remember distinctly what exactly he was saying, but it was very strong about how we are all in this material world covered by the modes of ignorance, specifically in the modes of passion. And then right as we got to this beautiful gazebo, and right as we got nearby, without seemingly moving or changing his gait or his expression, he stopped. And he looked at, looked around us, and then all of a sudden he said, their wife, their kingdom, everything we lost from this. We were all a little bit stunned. We were looking around, saying, what? You know, more or less, we had no idea what he was speaking. But his cane at that time had been pointing. And when we looked down, we saw that etched in the marble floor of this gazebo was this game that is still played in India. It's sort of a cross between parcheesi and chess. And Srila Prabhupada later elaborated that this was the game that the Pandavas were playing when they were cheated by the Shakuni and they lost their kingdom. Toba is the name of the children. So Srila Prabhupada was very dramatically articulating so many things to us. And we so much appreciated the little bits of time that we were able to experience this. The other example I wanted to give of showing this compassion towards us was that we had been given a kitchen in the back of Tirupati, in the back of the cottages. And it was something that we had never really worked with before. It was a wood stove. And they had provided this wood that was very volatile, very smoky, and it's burning. But still, we didn't know how to use the stove. And the wood stove, you have to have a flue open, and there are so many things you have to do so that it burns properly. And we were in this little, very enclosed area. And as we tried to light the stove, huge smoke started coming out. And we were hacking and coughing, and you couldn't see us, and we were totally black very quickly with the soot that the smoke covered. And we were two women, my god sister Felisa, myself, in there. And so as we were hacking and coughing with the stove going, black soot all over us, I opened the window to try to get rid of some of the smoke. And I was standing there with something, trying to fan out this smoke. And it was just all encompassing us. And then all of a sudden, I was fanning in between the smoke and the direction that I was fanning, stood this very beautiful figure standing there with a smile on his face. And it was Srila Prabhupada. And he was looking in, and all the smoke, of course, was going towards him. So he was also a little bit blackish at this time. But he looked in at us. We were hacking and coughing, trying to get rid of this. He looked in with this very sweet smile and he said, is everything all right? We were so surprised that he had done that. And that that despite all of the chaos that was going on here at the time, I believe Lisa had also dropped one part of the stone on her foot, and we later had to take her to the hospital that they had there to have it fixed. So it was just pandemonium. But within the midst of it, Srila Prabhupada was ever gracious and ever compassionate. And I remember so much that aspect of him. He was also very,
no nonsense, stern.
Well, that too, but I was more looking for his quality of being humble and totally non-predisposing at all. I remember one time in Bombay walking on the roof of the building that he lived in and sitting there having a conversation with two or three devotees, and we didn't know where Srila Prabhupada was, except that he certainly wasn't, we didn't think it was where we were sitting. And we were sitting there speaking, and after about 5 minutes, we looked over in one corner of the roof, and Srila Prabhupada had been sitting there silently cutting corellas. Corellas a bit of vegetable that's very popular in India, it's very good for the digestion. And he liked it in his vegetables. So he used to have us dry it for him in the sun so that he could bring it with him. And he had been sitting up there, he's very quietly cutting these corellas and drying them in the sun. He didn't even notice it and you didn't say anything. So that was another element of the character of Srila Prabhupada. He had so many facets of his character. Another thing that I'm sure Krishna Pai has acquainted you with was his incredible sense of humor. He was very funny. And that was one aspect of him that, Maharaj was speaking about the Dallas, when we joined in Dallas, we were all so young. I was 19 when I joined. And because we only had a few of the books at that time, I think that many of us had the tendency to take the philosophy of Krishna consciousness a little bit dogmatically, and just because we didn't know. And seeing Srila Prabhupada and seeing what a wonderful sense of humor he had changed everything for me, because I realized that behind the philosophy and some kind of sometimes technical, almost esoteric nature of the philosophy is the person within the Krishna consciousness. And it's very joyful and very wonderful to see and to experience that. And that was one element of Srila Prabhupada that I enjoyed so much experiencing. Sometimes we would have the opportunity in Bombay to sit on the roof with him every evening. And these are in my Krishna consciousness, in my association with Prabhupada, the most relishable times, because anyone could go up there and sit. And he went up from like, oh, about 5 o'clock in the evening till about sometimes 8:30 or 9. And anyone could come and go and sit with him. And most of the time, he was simply reminiscing, very jolly mood, telling stories of his youth, telling stories of the early days in New York or San Francisco. And if a devotee came from those areas, he would then speak about them and tell stories from that time. And they were always touched with humor, these stories, and joy. And we loved so much to just sit there and hear from him these wonderful things. And sometimes he would joke with the devotees. There was one devotee that who was very assertive, and I guess one would call him a little eccentric. Very sincere devotee. His name was Vishal. And Vishal had this habit that whenever Srila Prabhupada would come in front of Srila Prabhupada, no matter what Srila Prabhupada was doing, Vishal would either bow down and start saying, Nama Om Vishnu, you know, so that everyone would be interrupted, you know, the whole thing. Or sometimes he would get up and he would fold his hands and say, you are the captain of the ship, the master of the sails. And you know, he would go on and everyone would sit there as soon as he, you know, went through it. But, and he had a very beautiful wife, Vishal. And sometimes he would bring his wife, and they would stand in front of Srila Prabhupada. Just one night when he came in, Srila Prabhupada, he bowed down and did his whole thing. And so we all stopped, and we were watching him. And he said, Srila Prabhupada is very sincere and very, very, you know, suffocating before Srila Prabhupada. And he said, Srila Prabhupada, it says in the scriptures that in order to have the mercy of Krishna, you have to have the mercy of the spiritual master. And if you don't have the mercy of the spiritual master, you can't have Krishna. And I want the mercy of the spiritual master, so please tell me what I can do to get your mercy. So I remember, I will never forget Srila Prabhupada during this time. He was picking his teeth. And as I expressed, it was so graceful and so choreographed. And he was sitting up on his asana, and he was picking his teeth, and it was like he was thinking. And so he stopped and he looked at him, and Vishal was very earnest and very sincere. And Srila Prabhupada looked at him and he said, you want my mercy? He said, oh yes, Srila Prabhupada, oh yes. And Srila said, all right. He said, you give me all your money. Because I think I don't know what was behind the Srila Prabhupada. I don't think he released anything. He said, so you give me all your money. He smiled. He said, the more money you give me, the more mercy I will give. So we were all, we were all laughing, but Vishal was very serious. You know, he said, well, I know Srila Prabhupada, but you must be, kidding me. No, you give me your money and I will give you mercy. It was a very, it went on and on, but it was the whole mood and the way he expressed it and the way it was so enjoyable to everyone, even Vishal. It was just a one taste of one drop in the ocean of nectar that was being in the presence of Srila Prabhupada. So special. So I won't go on and on, but it's so nice to see new devotees come and take the shelter of Srila Prabhupada's senior disciples. And you can taste something of Srila Prabhupada through them, their actions and representations, and also their remembrances of Srila Prabhupada as well. It's so wonderful to see. So any questions about anything you're happy to...